fame. Runs after a lust. Runs after, is always jealous. They're taken out of the world that Hashem created of happiness, and eventually they only experience sadness and frustration, and they're never able to experience the happiness the world has to offer. So basically, it doesn't mean you're gonna die. It means if a person pursues fame, pursues lust, is jealous, they're not gonna be happy. They're never gonna be satisfied. If your goal is to be world famous, you become needy, very sensitive, very fragile. If your goal is to be, you know. I know you're gonna say that. I read your mind, right? That's your goal. Then eventually you become an unhappy, hypersensitive person. Okay, but okay. A quick story. You may have heard this story. It's a famous story. One time, Chavetz Chaim, as we mentioned last week, was a famous leader. He wasn't an official rabbi, but he was a very important leader, and he lived very simply. He lived in a simple home. So one time a wealthy person came to his home, and he looked around and he asked the Chavetz Chaim, "Where's you have such simple furniture? You have a chair and table. Where's all your furniture?" So Chavetz Chaim said to him, smiled to him, and says, "Tell me, my friend, where's your furniture?" He says, "Let me know. I'm just traveling. I don't have that furniture here." He says, "Yeah." I'm here temporarily.
You speak louder, please.
He basically said, "Yeah, I said, what do you mean? I should have furniture. I'm only here temporarily." So Chavetz Chaim said, "Yeah, I'm the same way." You know, the point is that we have to realize that our life of 80 years, 100 years, is a tiny flash of eternity. Our real life, we are eternal beings. And we're here this in this world to perfect ourselves, perfect the world, and to make a relationship with Hashem. But if we spend all our time pursuing material wealth, only temporarily, we miss that on the main part purpose of life, and for the rest of eternity, we miss that on that opportunity. So Chaim is saying, only temporarily. Why should I spend all my time on fancy furniture? I have what I need, and I could really invest in what I wanted, which is to perfect my character and perfect the world. Okay, one other quick story that not only are we not supposed to be jealous, but also we're not supposed to cause other people to be jealous. Often we have blessings, we like to put it on Facebook, and everyone should see all my good things. Okay? The truth is though, that doing that, you actually make some people feel bad. Some people that don't have that, you'll feel bad. That's the truth. It's a little bit selfish. Show off your blessings. People that don't have it, because what do you gain by showing it off? People click like. Right? Does it really benefit you? But other people make you feel jealous. Right? So there's actually a mitzvah not to cause jealousy. If you have a blessing, enjoy it, appreciate it, wonderful. Share it with those who love. But don't flaunt it to make some people feel bad. But whatever it is, don't flaunt it. Be modest about it. So it's a beautiful story. This is a fascinating story. Again, this is a high level. This is not expected for us, but it shows the sensitivity. There was a great tzaddik they've heard named Chaim Kanievsky. So Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, he has 14 children, and he lived in Bnei Brak with his wife, and they lived in a simple apartment. So admirers and students of Rabbi Kanievsky, they said, why is it fitting this great leader lives with a large family in a small apartment? You know, we'll pull together our money. We'll buy him a nice substantial apartment. So they went to Rabbi Kanievsky's mother, Rabbi Yisrael Yashiv. They went to Rabbi Kanievsky's mother and said, "We have this money. We want to buy your son a new apartment. Do you think he'll accept it?" She said, "So thoughtful of you. We'll think about it. And I'll tell you tomorrow." So she calls back the next day and she says, "Thought about it, and we spoke it over, and he wouldn't accept it." She said, "Why not?" She said, "Well, right now they live in a simple apartment, and they have 14 children. So now any of the neighbors feel it's a little cramped. They'll say, well, if the Kanievskis could manage with 14 children, then we can also manage. therefore we're looked at as like as a way of making people feel more comfortable. If they can manage with that, then we can also manage. But now, if we expand our fantasize, all of a sudden everyone's gonna feel like they don't have enough. They don't have enough, and they have to upgrade. But everyone all of a sudden will feel cramped. And whatever benefit that he gets, feel it's not worth the discomfort that all the people around, all the people who ask questions, all the other people who look up there to Kaneski, not worth that discomfort that it'll cause those people. So he didn't want to have this extra benefit because he didn't want anyone to feel bad about being jealous. Now again, this is not a you don't have to do this. You're allowed to have nice things, but it's a sensitivity. Do it in a way that doesn't make people feel inadequate. Okay. Any questions? Any thoughts? Okay. Let's move on. It's a quick story that I think it's very very I think it rubs against the grain of society that it's very I think at least to me it was very very striking. There's once a yeshiva in Europe right after World War I in the town of Brisk called Mekar Chaim, and there was the teacher there. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Prinsky. He was a very remarkable, sweet, kind person. So he was there for many, many years. He was a teacher, and sadly, about 20 years later, he lost his eyesight. And therefore he wasn't able to properly give a shiur, or concerned he wasn't able to give a shiur because he was blind. So he was replaced by a teacher named Reb Henoch. Okay, so Now, Yaakov was a teacher, and he lost his eyesight, and he was replaced. Now, Yaakov was so humble, even though he was replaced, he continued to attend the shiur, listening to the shiur that Hanukkah would give, and without ever interrupting, without ever correcting, would always listen to the shiur. Right. One day, however, he did open his mouth. There was a discussion about a certain opinion of an obscure opinion of the Pnei Yeshua. And they look around. They couldn't find the Pnei Yeshua. So the new teacher, Reb Henoch, turned to Reb Yaakov and said, "Do you happen to remember, what the Pnei Yeshua said?" So Reb Yaakov, who we mentioned was blind, said it over word for word, literally word for word, said over the material word for word. So the teacher was astonished. When did you last learn that? A little bit, a short while ago, before the war. Yes, it was 15 years earlier. He had thought 15 years earlier and he knew the material. The point is that even though Henoch was extremely fluent in material and he knew it all by heart, and he was replaced perhaps unjustly, he still would sit quietly in the shiur. He would still attend the shiur of this person who replaced him without that sense of jealousy and antagonism towards his replacements. So I think it's an extremely high level. Imagine what we'd feel like, if somebody. Now, if somebody was our successor, we'd always feel critical, we'd be like, that person isn't good enough. He didn't have that attitude. Okay, let's move on. Next, there's a mitzvah now. There's a mitzvah to not to deny what you owe, the number that you owe, and basically a mitzvah to pay what you owe. So often we think when we pay our Verizon bill, we pay our BGE bill, we're doing it because if we don't, we'll get shut off. The truth is, though, we're doing a mitzvah. We pay the bill, it's a mitzvah to pay what you owe. Basically, we're being honest. Basically, we had an agreement that they're going to provide the water, they're going to provide the phone service if you pay the money. So basically, you're keeping yourself out of the bargain, that's honesty. So basically, there's a mitzvah to pay what you owe and not withhold what you owe. So therefore, we could transform that simple mundane act of paying the bill, of writing a check, transform from simply a very prosaic act to an act that is close to Hashem. We imagine we're saying, I'm doing a mitzvah of being godlike, of keeping that word. And then when I pay the bill, we transfer that to become an opportunity to come close to Hashem, become more a person of better midos, bring holiness into the world, become a person who becomes more sensitive to holiness. So we're able to transform the everyday transactions into a mitzvah. That's
it. Do you pay a Jew first before you pay non-Jew?
Saying it again.
Do you pay a Jew first before you would pay a non-Jew? So if you have all your bills, but you only have X amount of money, do you pay your children's tuition over water, electric, phone,
sure,
and
sure,
all
sure.
that? Like, you know, one tuition bill could be seven other bills.
Sure, I understand, sure. Same question.
I ask every month.
Yeah, it's a lot. So I think the answer is that you know if your water's gonna get shut off, you know, and they're not gonna kick your son out of school. Basically, if they're gonna be flexible, then you basically pay what has to be paid. You know, you see, if you don't have the money, if you have the money. If you have all the money, then it's not a question. You know?
Right.
But if you don't have the money, you have to decide how to do it. So basically, you just pay whatever you can get away with. You know, whatever
Prioritize.
Will work. What's that?
Prioritize.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The truth is, it's not easy for them to turn off your heater or water. It takes a long time. So you get warning after warning after warning. Okay.
That's good to know.
They always send scary letters, but it takes a long, long time.
Is that a guarantee?
I always learn so much from you.
What is that?
Is that a guarantee?
So when they do, we're moving in with you.
Okay. So the point is, though, it's a mitzvah to pay what you owe. Quick story. So there's one particular mitzvah is there's prohibited to deny you no money. For example, it happens that people you know would see a charge on a credit card. They'll call the credit company and say I don't really pay this, and then they'll forgive it. But if you know that you really spend that you really do use make that charge, it will be a sin to say even though they'll refund it to you. They want to have good customer service. Even though they'll refund it to you, it will be a sin to say to deny it. So therefore, it's forbidden to deny that you owe somebody money when you really, really do. Based on that, there's a mitzvah when you lend money, it's very important to make sure that to write like a document, to write like a note, or to have do it in the presence of some witnesses, because if you don't, you can create a situation where the person either one will forget that they owe money, and then they may deny that they owe money, and that would be a prohibition. Basically, it'll be a form of theft, really. So therefore, there's a mitzvah. Whenever you borrow money, write a note, make a note of it, and basically make I owe you note that I owe you this money. So the fascinating story about the Chafetz Chaim. One time, he was traveling to sell his books, and it was late before Shabbos, so he had a little time, so he left his money at the safekeeping of the local rabbi. But so on Sunday, the Chafetz Chaim just said goodbye to the rabbi and left. He didn't take his money. So the rabbi ran to him and said, Rabbi, you forgot your money. You left it. He said, well, I'll tell you. There's a mitzvah that when you lend some money or when you give a deposit, you're supposed to. Write a document or get witnesses. It was so close to Shabbos, I didn't have an opportunity to write a note, and therefore, I made up my mind that because I didn't want to violate this principle of not giving deposit without a note or witness. I made up my mind that I'll give it to you as a gift, and therefore it's yours to gift. So the rabbi said, please take it now. He says, sorry, I don't like taking gifts from other people. It's your money. It's a gift. So only after that, I said, okay, but you don't take gifts. Put it on the floor. It's totally half your. Only then, did you finally agree to take it back? But the point is that the Chafetz Chaim was more important to keep away from any possibility of dishonesty than even he was willing to lose money than rather keep away from any possibility, any potential. Possibility of being dishonest. Okay.
Did you say it's dishonest if you don't write this agreement?
It really happens. It happens to me. I borrowed money from somebody, and wasn't sure if I paid back. It wasn't clear. It's a normal thing. It happens. The times you just don't know if you pay back or not. So there was mitzvah in order to prevent that ambiguity. Make sure to write IOU notes, and then when the person pays back, you return the note. Yeah, that way, it'll be a way to, in order to avoid any possibility of coming into this conflict and this and denying when you owe somebody money, is mitzvah to make that.
Did you say you're not sure if you have to pay it back?
Saying it happens to me where I wasn't sure if I paid back or not.
It happened.
I wasn't sure if I paid back.
You had paid it back.
I wasn't sure if I did or not. I wasn't sure if I did.
Okay.
But is it an actual error if you forget to write the note?
So it's a rabbinical, mitzvah, the rabbinical mitzvah to make sure to write a note. So therefore, not only would be a violation of rabbinical mitzvah, but that's based on the principle of keeping far away from dishonesty.
But is a violation of a rabbinical
mitzvah,
is it an actual
avera? It's a good. So suppose asking a good question, which is, when a person violates a rabbinical mitzvah, is that an avera? So okay, it's really a big topic, but in a nutshell, there's a Torah mitzvah in Dvarim, chapter 17, verse 9. It says, the mitzvah says, la yasur gamar usma. It's a mitzvah which is, we're supposed to listen to the enactments of the sages, and we shouldn't deviate left or right from them. So basically, there's a mitzvah in the Torah. The Torah says, the Sanhedrin and the rabbis have authority to create rabbinical enactments in certain cases. Therefore, it's a mitzvah to follow them. So the mitzvah itself is rabbinical, but the mandate to obey the sages of the Talmud, the sages of the Sanhedrin, that is a mitzvah. So it will actually be a Torah prohibition to violate rabbinical law.
So but are you saying that if I borrow money from you, and you don't write it down, then there's something wrong with that, right?
Right.
You've got to write it down.
That basically, the borrower, the person who borrows the money, or if you make a deposit, the person who's holding onto the money should write like a note, an IOU note to the person who eventually will claim it.
Well, you threw that anyway in banking.
Right. That's true. So it's true. So when you do it in a casual way, make sure that there should be some kind of a mechanism to make sure that you'd be able.
Is that a way so you don't get embarrassed of saying, "Hey, I want a note because I don't really trust you"? You can say, well, it's a Torah thing.
It's really there so that you won't come to the possibility of denying the owes of money. Because denying the owes of money is really a form of theft. In order to prevent that possibility, there's a mitzvah to make sure to write a note, to write a shtar, write a note, or to have witnesses.
One more question.
No.
So if somebody borrowed a small sum of money from you, like, say, $40 or something, and they didn't pay it back, and you think they forgot, but you don't want to embarrass them, and you, in your mind, say, "I forgive them, I forgive it, the money." So, is that okay?
Excellent question. So it's totally fine. It's totally fine. Now, it's only there is a prohibition. If somebody cannot pay, somebody cannot pay. This one does not have the money. We're not allowed to embarrass them. We should not allow to ask them for the money. No, they can't pay. That's a separate rule. They will learn a different time. That if somebody cannot pay, do not ask them. But if you know they have the money, it's just a matter of you don't embarrass them that they forgot. So you can do it in a nice way. Say, it could be just it slipped your mind, but is it possible that you didn't pay? You can say it in a gentle way. So there's nothing wrong with asking in a nice way. But if you want to forgive, that's fine. That's totally your prerogative. That's a person's prerogative. You're allowed to do that. That's fine. The main thing is that the person shouldn't deny, if there's still a claim, the person shouldn't deny it when there really is a claim. But if you've relinquished the claim, then that's fine. Okay, excellent question. So here's a fascinating story about this. It's a true story, it's unbelievable. This happened in Israel. This story happened about 15 years ago. There was a bus, there was an explosion, a terrorist attack on the number 2 bus that went to the Kotel. Remember the story? The number 2 bus, the Kotel? So one time there was a religious man who was on that bus, and he was on the bus and it exploded. So he's in the hospital. So the TV reporters went to the hospital to interview the victims. So this religious man, he interviewed, he was speaking, he was all bandaged up. And after answering all the questions, he said, "My friend, can I please do a favor?" "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, see, when I went to the bus, it blew up before we were able to pay. But here's the money. Could you please give us to Agat?"
He didn't get a ride.
What's that? He was on the bus, but it blew up. So he didn't get a chance to pay. He said, in the hospital, he says, please pay this to the bus company. So this made it made big news. It's a fascinating story. It shows, the blank. I could be wrong, but it could be that was actually an obligation because he really owed the money. Even though it was a tragedy and of course there are other pressing concerns. But to him, he felt it was dishonest not to pay. Therefore, even in the hospital, he made sure to pay the exploded bus.
Let me ask you a question. The guy that got on the bus, that paid full price to go from A to B, and the bus blew up halfway through, does he get a refund because the bus did not get him to where he was going?
Yeah, so it could be, it does, but normally the way it works in most cases is if you get at the next stop, so
no, but he didn't. The bus blew up. He had to get off by
then. Simply getting on. Once you go on, you pay, and then you know, even if you get off a minute later, you pay the same fare.
No, but the fare that you paid was to get you from Baltimore to New York,
and it blew. Probably would be a requirement.
A refund.
Probably, yeah.
But you didn't voluntarily get off the bus.
Right, exactly.
The bus got away from you.
Exactly. Is that a reason? What was that?
The bus got away from you.
Right. So there was a Greek woman named Rebezon Kanievsky. Rebezon Kanievsky. She was the wife of Kanievsky. She was an extraordinarily kind person. She was extremely gracious and sweet. So there was a person who lived in a moshav, like a small commune, and he lived in like northern Israel in the Galilee. He would come twice a week to Rebbe Kanievsky's house, and he knew that people would come to her and ask her advice, ask her for blessings, for prayers. So he would come twice a week, and he would ask her, you know, is it okay if I put my crate of eggs in the hall, you know, by your apartment, so when people come to be with you, they'll buy my eggs. So no problem at all. No problem. And basically people would buy the eggs, they would give her the money, and then you would come you know, every week you'd come pick up the money. So the family said, our mother lost a lot of money on this deal. Because the times that people forgot to pay her, people take the eggs and forgot to pay her. But she always made sure to give the egg seller the exact payment for all the eggs. Even if she would use her own money to give him the money that he expected. So, you know, so he's an example of how she was, again, this probably was beyond, not required, but it was her example of integrity. He's expecting this amount of money. So if people forget to pay me, okay, that's their issue, but why should this ex-seller have to lose money on my account? Okay. Related to this, but it's mitzvah not to delay payment. If you have employees, you have to pay them whenever they're expected. Because often people are relying on their paycheck to pay their bills. If you delay it, for example, a person gets paid on the first of the month, you delay it 4 days, they can't pay their rent. And it causes a lot of anxiety and stress. There's a mitzvah not to delay, not to make sure to pay your employees on time. Also for a service. If you let's say you pay a plumber or you pay a electrician, if payment is expected when the service is done, the mitzvah to pay right away. You shouldn't push it off. You should pay it that day. There's a fascinating story. It's a really amazing story about Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha was once was a Chassidic Rebbe, and his wife once she wanted to save. She saved money for fabric to make a nice dress for Shabbos, a beautiful dress. She saved the same money for a long time. She saved. Finally, she had enough money to buy fabric for a dress. She brings the money to Motel the tailor, and he says, "No problem. I'll be done within a week." So she's all excited. She can't wait for it to be done. She comes to pick it up, and as she puts it on, she tries it on, and as she gets ready to close the sale, he hears the tailor give like a little sigh. She said, "Mother, what's wrong? You know, why is that?" She says, "Well, I'll tell you the truth. My daughter's getting married soon, and I wish I could afford fabric like this for a dress for my daughter." So she said, Harrison said, "You know what? She could use it more than I could. Here, give her this dress. She gave her the dress." So she went home, and she was, you know, really felt appreciated this great mitzvah. She told her husband, "Zusha." So Zusha asked her, "You know, dear, where's the dress that you wait so long?" She said, "Well, you know, I heard mother needs it. I gave it to the daughter." So Zusha said, "That's an amazing mitzvah. But here, take this money. Take this money." So, what do you mean? She says, "Zusha was working the whole entire week, but then to get paid. You gave him the dress, but he never got paid. Take this money, go pay him. Go pay him for making the dress." Right. Why should he lose out on making the payment for the dress? Because you do the chesed of giving away the tricks. It's a extraordinary story. The point of the story is that there's a mitzvah to pay for a service. Okay, so let's do one quick one. There's mitzvah not to lie. So not to lie means a lie. Not to lie means not to say things that are not true. Right? To say that I went here and I didn't go there. That's another lot also means to have integrity, which means if I say I'll do this favor for you, if I say I'll pick this up for you, and I don't do it, I lie. When I don't do it, I'm lying. So lying is not is saying the truth, but also keeping your word, fulfilling what you said. Often, people are more careful about the first part than the second part. People say, yeah, I'll do that, then just forget about it. Forgetting about it, it's okay, you can forget about it, but that's actually a form of dishonesty. So part of lying is to make sure when we say something, it should happen. It should be real. Basically, part of the meaning of truth is that it's real. So for example, if I say I went there and I didn't go there, that's my description, it's not real. So also in the reverse. If I say I will do this favor for you, and I don't do it, that means the reality didn't match up with my words. So emes means to match up, your words should match reality. There's a joke, it's probably a joke. One time, a politician made many campaign promises. I promise I'll do this, I'll lower taxes, I'll improve healthcare, whatever. He made all these promises. And finally, when he became president, he did keep his promises. So he was approached, he made all his promises. He says, what do you mean? I never promised to keep my promises. So that's the joke. Really, the truth is, though, the whole idea of promising, the whole idea of making a promise is really the idea. Why should I promise to keep my word? Why isn't the word itself should be a promise? In the Torah's eyes, saying you'll do something, that's a promise. I promise to keep my promise, but if you have promised to keep my promise. How does that help? Right? If you say something, that's like a promise. Your word is your bond. You say something, it should be as if you did, and therefore you're not doing it. It's a sin of dishonesty. Yes.
So is Lee Netta a cop-out?
Excellent.
What did you say?
So
is Lee Netta being a cop-out?
Yeah. Good. So we're asking a great question. So what's a nether? Nether is an oath. Nether means, what a nether really means like this. Nether means, I'm going to do this. If I don't do it, I accept severe punishment on myself. That's another thing. Another means I'm willing to accept severe punishment if I don't keep it. When I say I make another, I'll do this, I'm saying may Hashem punish me if I don't. But that's another. So we always want to avoid making another. We only do it under extreme situations. So therefore, believe another means I'm not making another. Another is just a promise. Another is a very high level of an oath, which is again, accepting divine retribution if I don't. So we don't want to make a nether, so we say blue nether. So blue nether doesn't mean I won't do it. Blue nether means I'm not making a nether.
Right.
But it doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. It doesn't mean I'm going to try.
It just seems like so many people are using it.
Right,
like,
sure.
I'm going to go to the store, blue nether.
Right, it's true. Oh, yeah, it's true. People use it as I'm going to try. Really, it's a misnomer.
But doesn't that mean you're not making the promise?
It means I'm not making an oath.
But it's used, like she said, in making a promise.
It's true. So I think colloquially it's used in a more casual way, but the idea of the term means a nether is a mitzvah. If you make a nether, there's a severe penalty for breaking it. Therefore, we don't want to make it. Therefore, we're saying a blue nether. So the reason why we do this is because there's a concept that when you say I'll do a mitzvah, when I say I will go to shul or I will give tzedakah, that has the power of an oath, the power of nether. And therefore, when I say I'll do a mitzvah, I say blue nether. There's not going to be a nether. I'm gonna give my word that I'll do it.
But people, when they use it, if she says to me, will you do me a favor and pick me up and take me to the doctor's tomorrow? And I say, blee netter, yes, and I don't do it. I look at it as not as a promise, and and that's why I said it.
Sure.
Though it's made for a higher thing, just like a lot of things, nobody uses it for a higher thing.
It's true. So if you want to be precise, it would be better to say, I'm going to try. I'm not promising I'm going to try my best. I'm going to try.
Maybe that's not Hebrew.
What was that? Were you
saying I'm not going to try? That's not Hebrew.
You can say
Blei Neder is Hebrew. You don't say I'm not going to try.
Say Mantashah. Say God willing.
Oh, okay.
I'm not gonna call you because you're not gonna pick me up. You already said aloud.
Okay, fine, okay, fine. I know it's sort of a one room just your time. Okay, fine.
Well, what about the Israeli?
Right, exactly, yeah. So the Israeli answer. So the answer is, I don't know.
That's a mitzvah.
I don't know the answer. I have to ask my teacher. I don't know.
That's a mitzvah, by the way, when someone is giving a shir or whatever, or a rabbi, and they don't know, and they admit they don't know. That's a mitzvah to say, I don't know.
So yeah, I have to ask my teacher. I suspect that it's not proper. I don't know if it's a sin. I don't know if it's a Torah mitzvah or what, but yeah, I'm gonna get back to you. Gotta go. Believe me. Okay, so thank you all so much. It's really been so delightful to learn with you. But we'll take a 1 week hiatus. Please come back next week for a diskin, and then we'll send out an email, and we'll continue with more mitzvahs
about
how to make the world a kinder, holier place. Let me ask you a question. What do you prefer? Do you prefer chesed or do you prefer the second part of not doing things that are unjust, like sensitivity and integrity? Which mitzvahs? There should be chesed or mishpat. The two categories of mitzvahs that I took these from. Which do you prefer, chesed or mishpat?
Would it be possible to write the Hebrew of the mitzvah?
This is already typed up. This is from
my
book, but I can. Yeah,
it's just a thought. Or you could just write it.
I can do that.
Let me tell you something.
Okay.
I do have
that.
Thank you. And the reason I do have
that
is because.
In Sharon, no, so
like
Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
So when someone was sick or someone needed something, there was a small group over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I said, I'm not good at this one thing. And she's like, so that's not your thing.
But I'm talking about, when I talk about this, I'm retired. And I talk to a lot of retired people. And then they say, oh, I don't know what to ask. Well, why don't you go
is this,
and visit through this stuff?
Is this,
Oh, you know, a second time. Her husband probably had a...